News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings. It's about 7 minutes after 8 o'clock now with Dan and Dalton, and glad to have you along. It's the day after the day after the election, so maybe maybe calmer heads, cooler, you know?
Maybe. I saw last night, I think there were some protests beginning in some cities. I don't think it's as widespread as probably would have predicted for a Trump victory a few years ago, but there's still plenty of time between now and the certification and then, of course, inauguration, and we will see what happens going forward. 251-343-0106 if you want to jump on. Just a heads up, kind of what we have going on here over the next few days. Veterans Day, of course, is coming up on Monday, and the Mobile Veterans Day Parade, which it'll look a little different this year because of everything that's going on down with the Civic Center project. Can't really even get into the parking lot, and they're demolishing the Civic Center. For years now, we've been setting up with the Mobile Command Unit there in the Civic Center parking lot, and Larry Skoda and LNS Air have been a big-time sponsor for us for that Veterans Day Parade for years now, and we have, you know, food and water, donuts sometimes, and then you and I get started early in the morning as people start to roll in, all of the different floats and trailers and
it's tough.
Vehicles start coming in.
We start the show, we can't even see each other.
Yeah.
So that's how we have to use our radio instincts to actually be on the air.
Yeah.
Then the sun
finally comes
up.
We're owls when we get started. We have to use our nocturnal sense.
Kind of like that, yeah.
So, we get started early, and then folks start rolling in, and it's just a really good time. You get out, you see a lot of people, and talk to these veterans. It's what I appreciate most about this. This year, they're setting up the route on Canal, and then I don't have the map in front of me, but I think they're going to go up to South Broad. Is that right? And then over government, and then back around basically to where the parade started. And so it'll look a little bit different this year. Yeah, so they'll set up on Canal. We will be, if things go as planned, parked at the Icebox Bar doing our show from there. So come by and see us. They'll parade, put the route there on Canal, then move up on South Broad, go east on government, take it all the way to, I think it was Claiborne. Yeah, they'll go to Claiborne, back down past the Civic Center, and back onto Canal. That's kind of what the parade route is going to look like for the Veterans Day Parade, if I remembered that correctly. And we'll have some great interviews, hopefully, as we will all month long. I know Sean Sullivan has been doing, just as he does every year, putting these, we do Veterans Month for November. He's already stacked several really good interviews with veterans, and a whole lot more to come from that. So come on by Monday. The Veterans Day Parade will be out there and having a good time. And then Sean was out at the USS Alabama battleship yesterday, and they have a big to-do coming up on Monday at the Memorial Park as well. Starts early in the morning with the flag raising, and then throughout the day, ending with the Mobile Pops, 7 to 9 p.m.
You know what I love, too, at the Veterans Day Parade is seeing all of those Mobile County public school system junior ROTC
five or six schools that bring them out.
There's a bunch of them.
Yeah.
And we 1 year talked to the gentleman who was in charge of the entire county. It seems to me that there's there might be as many as 2,000 young people are in those organizations.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And when you see most of them all out there at one time, you know, it's just nice to see people that young that have got a clue and understand that you need a little help to get through your younger years and learn a little discipline, and they choose to do that on their own. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I think that's really commendable, for sure.
And you went out to William F. Green, and we'll go into more detail on this.
Yeah, can I do that real quick? Just want to say hello.
Talk about it. Yeah, I want to hear it, because I wanted to be out there.
Yeah.
We decided it probably wasn't best.
Right, because, you know, you had the
cold. Yeah, a little under the weather. That's
cold that's been lingering, so I thought maybe not the best, and you agreed. So, two more interviews yesterday. Really, I just loved doing that, and just kind of picking their brains and letting them talk about their time in the service and reflect on what the service has meant to them, and even for those who wanted to comment about living at William F. Green State Veterans Home up in Bay Minette and the people there. They speak very highly of them. So I spoke with U.S. Army Chief Warrant Officer Bruce Allen Terry. He was just a great guy to sit down and talk with, and talking about his experiences in the U.S. Army. And I also spoke with U.S. Coast Guard Captain Maury Allen Weeks. Weeks is from Mobile. He joined the Army or Marine Reserves back in the mid-90s and ended up actually becoming a U.S. Coast Guard. Member of that after that term with the Army Reserves, and got to a point of where I think he was, you know, he was somebody with a lot of rank, and he was in the middle of things such as 9/11. When that happened, he was at the station in Norfolk and Suffolk in that area of Virginia, not far from where Zach trained up in Little Neck. And so he was talking about that experience, that they were in a meeting watching TV when what happened at the first plane hit the Trade Center.
And we'll actually talk about that in a little bit. There's some recent news, okay. But yes, continue.
Yeah. And then he just said he realized, especially after the second jet hit it, like, this is now going to be everybody in this room. This is our lives.
Wow.
We are among those that are going to have to deal with this because of New York City being nothing more than a collection of canals and rivers and tunnels and bridges. And
you don't think? I don't think about that much.
I would not have thought about that.
Yeah.
And yet he talked about it immediately. He wasn't just watching this tragedy unfold on TV. He knew that he was going to be part of it, and they were in meetings like that.
Wow.
Yeah, and then he said he'd been to meetings at the Trade Center before, so he's very familiar with it.
And
so
he was pretty involved in the, did you say Katrina or the oil spill?
Yeah, Katrina. Yeah. So he's got some very interesting
I can't wait to hear
observations
his story
about that. Yeah, very good.
That'll be great. And then our Veteran of the Year, Tom Claxton, you know, normally he's back there on the trailer with the other veterans, and this time he'll be in a car. I mean, he is, you know, the back of the car, kind of the where you wave.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. There's probably some official term for doing that, but they put you in the convertible, you sit on the back, and then you wave at everybody. That will be Tom Claxton as the Veteran of the Year from the South Alabama Veterans Council this year. So looking forward to that, and shout out Tom if you're out there on Monday.
What a great guy.
Let's get into some text. Damn Yankee says, major traffic jam on Spring Hill and I-65. Yeah, I've been hearing some Spring Hill issues this morning. We had Michael earlier say Spring Hill eastbound near Tut Hill was at a standstill. And there was an accident on 65 at airport, just a dump truck in the ditch. And that one I had someone text in earlier. I think it was that northbound 65 onto airport is where that dump truck is in the ditch. But I don't think that would be affecting the Spring Hill traffic. So a couple different accidents over there. Cindy texted, a coworker called in. We'll talk about, we'll get to that here in a little bit. I appreciate the text, Cindy. We'll talk about that in the next segment. I wanted to get into, you mentioned 9/11. It's crazy to me, absolutely crazy to me, that the 9/11 terrorists are still kicking. We put them in Guantanamo, right? But
yep.
A military judge yesterday ruled plea agreements for the September 11th terrorists that were handed out by Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin are valid. And that revives the possibility that the man accused of planning those attacks, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, and two of the accused accomplices could eventually be sentenced to life in prison instead of death. The judge is Colonel Matthew McCall. He ruled that Secretary Austin acted too late and beyond the scope of his authority when he rescinded the three separate pretrial agreements August 2nd. That was 2 days after a senior Pentagon appointee had signed them. Colonel McCall said he would move forward with having Mohammed and the two other defendants, Waleed bin Attash and Mustafa al-Hawassi, appear before his court to enter their pleas separately, but he set no timetable, perhaps to give the prosecutors time to decide whether to appeal. This decision, the latest to inject uncertainty into the long-running case at Guantanamo Bay against Mohammed and four others who were charged in 2012 with conspiring in those 9/11 attacks that killed nearly 3,000 people. Prosecutors disclosed the deal with three of the defendants this summer, said it was meant to bring some finality and justice to the case, which had been mired in litigation over the CIA's torture of defendants and other issues. Yeah, I imagine that is one of the most complex cases to work, right? The mastermind of 9/11 and accomplices. And I guess I understand when they said over the summer they just want finality and justice, because it's probably pretty difficult for some of the family members involved. But,
yeah, but
it just the what, message you send, and I know we're a place of law, we're a country of laws.
Mm-hmm.
The best thing to do as soon as you find these 9/11 terrorists would have been to throw them off the tallest tower.
Yeah.
It didn't happen.
No, and years later, and to any individual, what was the term, finality and...
Finality and justice.
And justice. If you had 100 people in the room, those could mean something different to each of them.
Yeah.
So these families suffer and these terrorists continue to live. Finality and justice is exactly what? Well, to one person, it might mean one thing. To another, something completely different.
Yeah. But it's kind of just been a hidden story, right? They've been in Guantanamo for so long. Every now and then a story comes up. So it's kind of like you just have them, you know, in a
out of
box
sight,
in
out
the
of sight, out of mind.
Out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah.
But they're still alive. So I just, when you mentioned 9/11 and with that story being in the news, I thought it was interesting. 8:18, when we come back from the break, get into a little bit of the Trump administration maybe starting to come together. Now, a big part of that is such a big victory, taking the Senate back. Mitch McConnell was happy about that, of course,
though
he won't be the Senate leader. That means that should have a fairly easy time, maybe too early to say that, fairly easy time getting his nominees through.
And getting legislation through, too.
And also, depending on how the House goes, and things are still looking good, it's on a razor's edge, but if the Republicans pull House and the Senate, are they going to be able to get it done? They didn't the first 2 years with Trump, but that was a totally different kind of world then.
That was a completely different world. You're right. I think they're more aligned this time. It's 8:18 with Dan and Dalton. What's going on, Mobile, Baldwin County? Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig. And Dan, right now, with a little advice for you. If you're looking for an easy way to get out of town, I got it. Breeze Airways, they've got your ticket at Mobile International Airport with their new schedule. It's never been easier to plan a quick getaway. Nonstop flights to Orlando take off every Friday and Monday. And here's the best part. Flights start as low as $39 one way. $39 one way. Breeze Airways, known for their seriously nice flights, combining affordability with comfort and ease. And flights on the Airbus A220 built right here in Mobile. All the fun in Orlando, just 1 hour away from the new airport, just minutes from downtown. Again, big news. Breeze Airways now offering flights on Fridays and Mondays, perfect for a weekend getaway or quick trip to start the week. And the flight starts as low as $39 one way. Book your flight today at flybreeze.com. Hassle-free direct flights from Mobile International to Orlando with a flight time of just about 1 hour in the air. Starting at $39 one way, go to flybreeze.com.
Terry texted in, waiting to hear about all the deep state and Dem leadership pardons that Biden's going to, is this going to give out or has given out, Terry? I think the big question is, will he pardon his son, right? And if I were son, I'd say, you better, right? You're my dad. But
well, the way Biden's been kind of wacky here lately, kind of throwing all kinds of gas on the fire for Kamala near the end of her, near the end of ramping up to that election.
Yeah.
He might be like, you know, the heck with him, too.
Kid
was turned into a lot of trouble.
He's turned on his son. I don't think he's done that. Say what you want about the Bidens and that they're a crooked family, which I believe that there's been some malfeasance.
But a family nonetheless.
They are pretty solid as a family, pretty tight there. Kind of like the Cuomos. We saw that with the Cuomo brothers, right?
Oh, yeah.
When one went away and the other. The pardons is interesting because he's going to pardon Hunter. I think there's no doubt about that, even though he said he wouldn't. But if he doesn't, does Trump pardon Hunter Biden?
Wow.
And also, will Trump pardon Julian Assange and Edward Snowden? And he had the opportunity to. He had 4 years where he could have done that. But more pressure on him now to do so going into this one. And then January 6thers.
Things have changed in 8 or 4 years, depending on the way you want to look at it.
Will Trump pardon J6ers who've been put in jail? Will he pardon, anyone who's been, were there criminal Was anyone criminally charged for not taking the vaccine? I know a lot of people lost their jobs, but it'll be interesting to see how Trump...
He could right some wrongs.
Yeah, he could right some wrongs, or will he be more focused on the future moving forward? Gardner says Trump should pardon January Sixers.
Really interesting, yeah, because he's taken a different tone, I think, since the first assassination attempt. There's been kind of a different tone with Trump, and I think all that played into him being elected, actually.
Yeah.
He's, you know, he wasn't going to set fire to the place. He was going to walk in, and he was going to become president once again. But this, the tact that he uses is going to be interesting to just kind of sit back and watch and see the way he goes about it.
Yeah, I think it will be. And also, with Trump coming into office, you know, the House, it's so important. Not just because of legislation and getting things through easily, but if Democrats hold the House, you know, we're going to be looking at charges that they want to lead to impeachment. It's just going to be lawfare through and through. That's what some people say. If it's a tight House, I feel like there are enough Democrats out there who have been pushed towards the center lane over these last couple months.
I agree.
That I think there's going to be a lot of Democrats who aren't as fired up about going after Trump for an entire 4 years.
I think you're right. And I think the fact that he won the popular vote, that tells everybody something. The first Republican to win and win the popular vote in a long time. And I also think it's going it's sending a message to anybody that is creating something that they want to be consumed by all Americans, like, I mean, Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
Hollywood's going to have to come to terms with some of their rhetoric against Trump, because he's now a very, you know, I mean, he won the popular vote.
Right.
You can't be trashing the guy and the people you're trying to make consumers of what you produce, because if the consumers turn on you because of your rhetoric, you're going to get hurt with the bottom line.
Yeah, the freakout has been strong, of course, from liberal voters.
Some, yeah.
But there's also a lot of acting going on.
Yeah.
Because so many people went viral. You know, the people that went viral for screaming after Hillary lost didn't think they would be going viral. I don't think they thought their faces would be on the internet as memes for years and years and years and years.
That's what
but
happens.
But now what you have in this tech age, 8 years later, is people saw the loss, and they might not even care, but they're acting. And they're going and filming themselves going, no, yeah. She lost.
Yeah.
And they're
yeah.
just trying to be that next viral meme, right? But there are some people that are really fired up about the loss. And will we see protests? I don't know. There's a lot of questions from now until January. And the House is one of those. We might not know who has control of the House until much later this month, actually. And you got to get 218 to control the House. The Republicans have flipped several seats. Democrats have flipped a few. But the Republicans are the odds-on favorites to take the House right now. There's 205 seats that have been called for the Republicans by the New York Times to this point. 190 called for the Democrats. I've seen other levels where they have 206 for the Republicans, 204 for the Republicans, but there's several outstanding races. California takes so long to count their votes. They know pretty much immediately who's going to win the presidential because it's blue every
time. They know, yeah.
But there's a lot of congressional races in the conservative parts of California and even purple parts of California that could be the difference here. And we might not know the final result from those until maybe a week from now or 2 weeks from now.
So California, I get that being one of the hangups. Where else are we waiting on these results that could end up to be crucial?
Looks like there are some Arizona races that are outstanding.
That's a little weird, too.
There is a Alaska race that's outstanding, Colorado, a few maybe one Maryland, a few New Yorks. Most of those are going blue. There's some Pennsylvanias that are leaning red right now. Oregon outstanding. Some Washington votes outstanding. Those are pretty much the states. Arizona, New York, California, Pennsylvania. North Carolina went pretty blue in everything except president. That was interesting, this election cycle.
What does that tell you? That should tell you a whole lot. 830 FM Talk 106.5. Rob Lanyap with Mobiles. Rob Holbert.
With Lanyap. Lanyap.
He's on the road. Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, 835.
Little Muscadine Bloodline there for you this morning. Cool seeing them do so well on the national stage. Red Clay Strays, too,
yep,
from Mobile. Just stacking up, you know, one major event after another. Starting with that Rolling Stones opening for them at Fenway a few months ago.
They did.
And then they've, you know, done one thing after another. Jimmy Fallon, I think they've done another late night show. They did CBS Saturday Morning last week.
That's right.
And what's the big one coming up? Oh, NPR's Tiny Desk. Have you ever watched those concerts? NPR's Tiny Desk concerts?
I've not.
It's the only good thing NPR does. And it's amazing. So that'd be really cool when Red Clay Strays hop out on the Tiny Desk. But cool to see these musicians from Mobile doing so well. 835. Speaking of a musician from Mobile.
Yeah, that's right. He is a musician.
Rob Holbert with Lanyap. LanyapMobile.com joins us this morning. Hey, Rob.
I think y'all are using the term musician a little loosely here.
Well, you're in a band. You play. People pay.
We don't need to be talking about me in the same breath as
others. Well, you know, it's you guys had that poll a few months ago about, you know, who's your favorite musical artist or band come from Mobile.
Right.
And the list was about 50 people long, 50 people and bands long. We've really been showing out these last few years.
There have been a lot of good musicians from here lately. Yeah, especially lately. Of course, you know, we've always had good musicians. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Buffett kind of set the standard for success anyway. And it's been a good year, big couple of years for us with music.
Yeah, love it, love it, love it. So this is a big new edition of Lanyap out now, the post-election edition, and let's get into it and start with the elections. I guess really no surprises in AL1 especially. AL2, Figures was the favorite going in. I thought, Rob, that it would be a little bit of a closer race, though. He ends up 9.5 points up, and they called it 10 p.m. right around then on Tuesday night.
Yeah, that was. It was, in typical political wisdom is, you know, everybody's saying, well, okay, the district is about, I think, about 5 points different racially, black and white makeup. So everybody, the expectation was that, you know, that would be somewhat along those lines. Figures finished out, you know, above that difference. So clearly he outperformed the difference in the makeup of the district. So, you know, I mean, like I said last week, I think both those candidates are, you know, qualified candidates. They're sharp people. They have differences of opinion, different policy things that they're interested in. But, you know, from the standpoint of will they represent us well, I think that they would do fine. I was a little surprised it wasn't closer than that. But and especially given that, you know, the tenor of the whole state as a whole and the country as a whole was that, which you saw overall, at least in Alabama, for instance, there was less voting than in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And there was less Democratic voting than in 2020 and less Republican voting even. I mean, overall it was down some. So, you know, it kind of bucked that trend a little bit.
Yeah, I didn't expect turnout the numbers to be that low. We were getting so many reports from folks, just as we do every year. How's your polling place looking? And wrapped around the building, you know, tough to get in to park.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's pretty standard for presidential elections. I wonder, in AL2 specifically, if because both candidates were, you know, pretty with it, right? I mean, it wasn't – if you're looking at it from a nonpartisan lens, both – are able to put sentences together. Both seem to know what's going on in this country and in this world. They have different political leanings. So I'm wondering if maybe because both were pretty decent candidates, if you're a moderate looking out there, if that maybe kept people from the polls, especially if they were disinterested in the more volatile presidential election in AL2.
Yeah, I don't know if that kept people from the polls. I don't know. You know, statewide, that number was down. I think we were at 58% statewide, something like that.
That's about right, yeah.
And we were over like 62 4 years ago, which was the highest vote total we've ever had, you know. And I mean, I don't know percentage-wise where that stands, but it's certainly the highest in a while.
Yeah, the highest in Alabama, Rob, was 73.8% for Obama versus McCain back in 2008. Okay. So that was it.
That was the high point of voting at that point.
That was it. Yep.
So you get that many. Yeah. So I mean, we're still a good bit off of that. But it's pretty fascinating to look at all that stuff. I mean, when you look across the country and you look at where voting, you know, it was down a little, you know, some from 4 years ago. I mean, it's still a pretty large amount of people voted. I mean, mm-hmm. overall, but it was still a little bit down. I mean, I think we were looking at Mobile County numbers yesterday, and I think Trump did about 2,000-3,000 votes lower than he did in 2020, and Harris did like 8,000 or 9,000 votes lower than Biden did in 2020. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's a pretty big difference. And I mean, you know, you're talking about 10,000 fewer votes overall.
One more question about AL2, or maybe one more point of discussion here, is Republicans came in this time to this newly redrawn district thinking, you know, we might have a chance. We think we might be able to pull it off, especially when Biden was still at the top of the ticket. Kamala coming on really kind of changed their perspective a little bit on that. But now that the result is in, and it was a 9-point loss, and Dobson seemed to do, I think she had as much going for her as she could, minus the name recognition going into the race, right? Other than that, she ran a pretty dang good campaign. And to finish 9 points down, I imagine a lot of Republicans, if this district stays the same, a lot of Republicans will be looking at it and saying, is it worth it? I don't know if we can pull that off if Dobson could only get within barely get within 10 points.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And, you know, the other thing about it is I'm sure the district will be tweaked over time. Mm-hmm. There's an expectation that it will be, and I doubt it will be tweaked to become, less likely to have a Democratic representative. And so, yeah, it may become more difficult. And I mean, I think it's still a district where someone could make a run if you're dealing with the right circumstances. If Figures leaves, or Figures doesn't do a very good job, or people don't like him, if those things are present and you have somebody that has a lot of name recognition, you probably might have that opportunity. I think she ran a pretty good campaign, especially for somebody who's never run that kind of campaign before. I think she did very well. But it probably is going to have a lot of people rethinking whether that is a very likely district, and we may get back to the old standard of, you know, a person running and then have some sort of very fringe, weird candidate who, you know, qualifies on the other side who has no chance.
Yeah, we've seen that for sure. Rob, at the top...
Well, I mean, that's pretty standard for everything.
Yeah.
But we, you know, speaking of the Barry Moore race, right? You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, there you go. Top of the ticket, do you sense less freak out from those on the left, even in this in the Mobile area, and even nationally? What is your sense? I mean, Trump did win the popular vote along with winning, you know,
the electoral,
the electoral college.
I mean, I think that's, I don't, you know, I think, and I'm not trying to take anything away from him, but I don't know that that's settled yet, but it certainly seems like that's going to be the case.
Okay.
That's a big deal. And when you look across the country, every demographic group shifted more toward him. So he had growth in, you know, Hispanics, among Blacks, among Asian. I mean, he had growth in all those groups, which is that's a big deal for him and for the party if that is, if they maintain that. I mean, I think he's still, there's obviously, you'll have to see it down the line, but I mean, you know, there's obviously the circumstances of the economy always make a big difference. I mean, I think it's the number one thing people vote on regardless. I mean, as somebody I was listening to said, you know, there's never been a situation in which, you know, a president has a low approval rating and the economy's in the dumper where people don't get rid of the president. So, that was there. I think people, you know, I think the midterm elections gave people thoughts that maybe that wasn't the case. Maybe that was going to, you know, the Democrats could buck that trend, but clearly not. So, you know, it's, yeah, I think there's less freak out probably overall. I think most people are sort of just like, well, it's resigned. You know, I don't know. I mean, you know, from my personal standpoint, I'm like, you know, does it make that big a difference in terms of my day-to-day life? Mm-hmm. Probably not. And it's, you know, I wasn't going to be jumping up and down regardless either way. But that's just me personally. But, you know, so it's, I think, yeah, you know, the things to me, I'm glad that it was a definitive win and that there was not any of this issue of getting down a nitty-gritty and looking at precincts and you know, in Missouri, you know, in Wisconsin or something like that, trying to figure out what happened. That stuff is just, that was the biggest worry I had, is getting into that and going down that road. And I'm glad we're not going down that road, because I felt like, I mean, I know that everything was in place to go down that road. So it's nice to not have that happening.
I agree.
Rob, let's talk a little bit about, a story we've been talking about for some time. We finally hear from Admiral Kent Davis. This happened late last week. And after the use of the supreme executive power to get him knocked off as commissioner, he speaks out and goes direct. He directly says that Ivy's wrong, that as far as the ARPA funding, he said everything went through the board and then I just approved. He wasn't pushing anything. That's his claim. He said they scored the proposals. I didn't touch the proposals because I didn't want to be accused of using undue influence. He said at the end of Dale's article, I think everyone is smart enough to tell this is retaliation. I can't be fired for filing an ethics complaint. And that's kind of become the part of the argument from the Ivy team, is that he should have never filed the ethics complaint, and that's why he's out.
Yeah, I mean, they're firing him for, in my opinion, they're firing him for filing the ethics complaint. I mean, they put together a board to hand out that money. And, you know, he did not make those choices, from everything we can see, that it was put together a board that had, yes, people from the Veterans Board, but also people from the mental health department that were involved in it. And so, you know, Ivy's group has trashed him pretty hard. I think, you know, one of the people he said that Bill Poole, who is the director of finance for the state of the governor's office, called him and told him there was nothing. When they looked at it, they cleared everything. So we've not been able to talk to him. He won't talk to anybody. They've kind of hidden him away. It would be nice to hear from him, what he has to say. But I will also say this, is that, you know, from Ivy's standpoint, we have asked them point blank, can you give us some examples of when this type of executive power was used before to supersede an independent board? And they just said, we're not talking to you anymore because you're mean. You know, that's basically it. You know, they don't like what we wrote. They don't like us covering the story, so they're not speaking about it anymore. Which just, you know, I've been doing this 35 years. I can tell you, when people do that, it means they don't have an answer.
Hmm. Yeah, and how often,
you know, this is an unprecedented use of quote unquote power. And it's not an opinion; it's true.
Yeah,
this has not happened before in this type of situation.
How often do conversations with the governor's office end with "you're mean"? Click, hang up.
You know, they don't like some things. They don't like my column. They don't like, you know, they got to pick on her. But, you know, yeah, I know, it's weird. but you know, the reality is, we're just asking, all we're doing is asking their, you know, them to put their part in, you know, to have their opinion in, or to have their facts put in the story, and they won't even do that. So that tells you what you need to know. They're pretty simple questions. And, you know, I think that if they're going to embark upon, I mean, that's the main thing we're asking them, is, look, you're setting a precedent here. It looks like you're setting a precedent. What makes you think you're not? And they, you know, I feel like they ought to have to explain to the public how they came to this conclusion that this authority exists for the governor, and what it will mean for future governors. You know, if the governor can override any board on which she sits, which is like 400 different boards, then why have the boards?
Yeah.
I mean, that includes, you know, the trustee boards of trustees for all the universities.
Yeah.
I mean, can they just hire and fire all the presidents? Can they do whatever? I mean, this opens a can of worms. And I think people are, you know, they just want to skate by and act like it's this one little thing, but it opens up a huge issue, I think. and yeah, they ought to have to explain it.
As Jeff Poor pointed out pretty much immediately after the use of the supreme executive power, this means Ivy owns the decisions that have been made, you know, like with Scott Harris. And she kind of scapegoated him in a way when people were so upset with how he was using COVID. But now that's
back
on her.
Then she couldn't do this.
Right. Yeah. So
back then she didn't have this power, but now she has the power.
Now all of a sudden, appointed by somebody, the power appointed to Ivy. Did you guys, before we let you go, saw Brady Petrie wrote about Hulk being in Baldwin County yesterday. Did you make the office do paper, rock, scissors, or how did you decide who got to go cover one?
Look, I will tell you this. I walked in yesterday and I said, you know, I've been doing this a long time and I'm super jealous. I mean, I'm just like, you know, I've never interviewed anybody. The Hulkster?
Yeah.
And I mean, on top of that, Hulk pointed at Brady. I mean, he pointed at him and called him brother at some point. And I'm like, this is, you know, I mean, Brady's kind of at a journalistic high point right now. I think it's just going to be downhill from here on out. I don't know.
That's awesome. Well, read up on that and everything else in the latest issue of Lanyap. How can folks sign up online and get it delivered directly to them, Rob?
So you can, of course, pick us up in the purple boxes all over the community. You can also sign up online at lanyapmobile.com for Lanyap Daily, where we are putting news out every single day. And, you know, we're sort of asking folks that are picking up the paper, like, hey, you know, if you want to give us a little bit of money for that paper, that'd be great, too. You can Venmo it to us or PayPal us and you know, just, like, put a coin in the box, so to speak. You know, it helps out.
All right, Rob, thanks a bunch. You help us out every Thursday, as you have today, and we'll talk to you again in 1 week's time.
All right, guys. Y'all have a great weekend.
All right. Rob Holbert, Lanyap.
Rob
Lanyap from LanyapMobile.com joining us as he does every Thursday. Coming back, we'll wrap up the show, 251-343-0106. We'll let you know who's going to be on Jeff's show, and he's got quite the lineup coming up on Mobile Mornings.
I guess farewell to Barbara Streisand and Cher and Miley Cyrus. And
did Miley say she was going to leave?
She did one time, and then she came
Party
back.
In the USA. She can't leave. It's a great song.
Some of the people that were saying Trump wins again, I can't take it. So anyway, y'all have a good time out there.
I thought it'd be fun. I missed my window, but before the election, I wanted to say that I was going to fight the results regardless of who won. Like if Trump won,
you're going to fight that.
Oh, it's rigged.
Yeah.
If Kamala won, same thing.
Yeah.
But doesn't seem like a whole lot of that's going on. Although there are a few out there, a few Democrats who are saying it's impossible. It's impossible that there's 15 million fewer votes for Kamala than there were for Biden. And then Republicans are going, Yeah,
that is impossible.
We agree.
So what happened the last time, actually?
Exactly. Coming up on the Jeff Poor Show, how about starting it with a bang? Senator Tommy Tuberville joins Jeff just after 9:05 this morning. April Marie Fogle joins Jeff in hour number two. And then hour number three kicks off with Congressman Jerry Carl. And then Congressman Gary Palmer. So a great Jeff Poor Show on the way. Way too early to talk about this, but the numbers are out there, so I thought I'd just throw it. The top odds of being the 2028 president.
Oh, we're going there already?
Well, at least sports betting dime is. And with J.D. Vance now being vice president-elect, makes sense that he would be the leader in the clubhouse odds. So they have him at about 3-1 odds to be the next president of the United States. He's followed by former First Lady Michelle Obama.
Really?
They have the second best odds for her. Newsom, DeSantis, Tulsi Gabbard just behind DeSantis in the odds. Tucker Carlson, they have at 14-1. You keep going. Kamala Harris has worse odds than Tucker Carlson.
But that's legit
and
right there.
Tied with Oprah Winfrey and just ahead of Pennsylvania Democratic Governor Josh Shapiro.
How about Stephen A. Smith giving it to Oprah Winfrey, too?
Yeah.
Some fights among the ranks there.
I'm not seeing Tim Walz in the odds.
And you will not.